I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories.
Hi, my name is Anna, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a former midwife turned midwitch, and I now work with women worldwide, assisting them in having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. I offer one-on-one sessions and packages and online courses for conscious mamas who don't want to leave their birth up to chance. I also mentor current and aspiring birth workers in my Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship Program. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment right now and leave a review. They mean the world to me and is also your way of helping me reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. Together, we are changing the birth narrative, one birth story at a time. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Dana. Dana is a mama of two from the Bass Coast, Australia. Her first birth ended in an epidural, episiotomy, retained placenta, and mastitis. And going from experiencing a catalyst of interventions with her first, Dana was determined to heal before having her second. She wanted to fully understand what happened and where things went wrong so she could have a natural and physiological birth with her next baby. With the full support of her husband, Dana dove into a deep primal state and roared her baby out. She achieved the birth that she'd so deeply desired. It was healing and transformative beyond words. And in today's episode, she's going to share all about it.
I just want to give a shout out to Anna and her mentorship program. I've been so grateful for the effort and thought that Anna put into this mentorship. There's so much depth and wisdom within it. It's so much more than just learning about physiologic birth. I feel like I've really gone to places that I didn't expect and really took a journey within myself to look at things that are challenging, but need to be looked at before holding space for another person. So I'm really grateful for Anna. I'm really grateful for this program, for sisterhood, for the relationships and the connections to women all over the world that I've got to experience. And I can't recommend the program enough. Thanks so much, Anna.
Thank you to Brittany, who you just heard sharing her experience of being a part of the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship Program this year. Today, there's only two more days before the early bird offer for this mentorship starting again in January 2024 ends. If you'd like to join me and Brittany and a whole new cohort of women from Australia, Europe, Canada, the US, and Central America, then here is your invitation. Save $700 by applying before the end of October. That's $700 if you apply this month only for the upcoming mentorship start in January. I am so excited to be meeting you all soon and go on this powerful journey together. This episode on the Day of Samhain is sponsored by a previous podcast guest called Megan. She owns the artisan apothecary Alta Ritual, in which she creates high vibrational beyond organic for purest and potent products like natural skincare ritual routine sets and ancient herbal spigyric extracts for internal and external use. All her products are made with intention, held with reverence from seed to ceremony, and slow crafted in the UK. Megan herself used herbal extracts for wellness and deep herbal cleansing prior her own pregnancy, which you can listen to in her episode, Ceremonial Water Home Birth in the Age of Aquarius. Doing a heavy metal detox supports natural conception, which is why Megan will be sending out a free turkey tail extract that helps heavy metal detox, supports immunity and vitality with every order she receives from now on throughout all of November. She also offers you a 10% discount when using the code HEAL when buying any of her products. I have the passion flower extract in my home apothecary, and this is a beautiful herb that calms the mind and nervous system and is also wonderful for postpartum anxiety and is safe while breastfeeding. These rare organic alchemical crafts are truly transformational and available to you via the online store at altaritual.com. Find the link and discount code in the show notes. Hi, Dana, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you, Anna. How are you?
I'm good. Excited to hear your story. We kind of briefly just mentioned before starting this recording that we actually met a few years back now when you attended one of my online Maiden Mother Maga village circles. Yes. And I was like, oh, I recognize this face and this name, and that couldn't really place. And then now we just figured out, oh, that's how we knew each other. So that was your first pregnancy that was. And now you've had two babas, and you're here to share with us the wisdom from both of them. So the first one, we're going to dive on into that one. It did end up being a medicalized hospital birth. And you're going to share with us kind of the takeaways and the gems from that. And then we're going to dive on into your most recent one, which was a fully natural birth. So with no further ado, take us back to, you know, becoming pregnant the first time and, you know, deciding where to birth and your birth prep and how it all kind of came about that it ended up being the birth that it was in the end.
Yes. So I fell pregnant relatively quickly with my first son, Ari. It was only probably two cycles in that I fell pregnant. So it was quite a shock, but also very, very exciting time for us both. With the labor prep, I was quite naive when I went into my labor prep. I just believed I was going to labor like my mum. And my beautiful mother has had these very quick births with my brother and I. And she assured me that I would just birth like her and it would be really quick and I would go quite instinctual and, into that primal state of birthing. Mm. So I didn't really do much prep with my first birth. I had a relatively smooth pregnancy with Ari. There was no issues. I was low risk, so it's pretty straightforward. I knew I wanted to have him in the hospital because that's just kind of what I knew at the time. I didn't know there was so much more to birthing, like outside of the hospital and what could be done. And I spontaneously went into labor at 40 weeks. I remember it was about 11 o'clock at night and I felt this pop. And
this gush of water, and it was a bit of a shock because I wasn't sure when your waters were meant to break or what that popping sound was because of the preparation that I hadn't done.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because you never did any kind of birth preparation course or anything like that. You kind of, which is lovely. It's like a lovely thing that you felt so trusting in your body and, you know, and that you saw birth as normal and natural and that you would just do it. But it also kind of, it's such a good takeaway though that, you know, it is a huge undertaking and it helps, especially as modern women, to kind of know a bit more about it. And for anyone listening who hasn't had a baby, you know, the waters can break at any time. They can break before labor, days before, they can break in the beginning, they can break during, and they can break at birth, and they can break after the baby's born, can come out in the sac. So there's no, like, you know, normal when it comes to breaking of waters. They break when they want to break.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that now. Yeah, it was quite, I could just feel the adrenaline rushing through me as well because I'm thinking, I was so excited, he's going to be here soon. And I lost my mucus plug fairly quickly after my waters broke. And with that, the contractions started to come on fairly quickly. And my husband and I, we were working through them together. But looking back, I was very much like not moving with the contractions. I was almost bearing down and like gritting through them in a sense, not moving with it.
So a little bit of tensing against, maybe.
Yeah, like not stepping into.
Not meeting it, not leaning into, but kind of tensing again.
Resisting?
Yeah, resisting, right.
Yeah. So we labored at home for probably about 10 hours and my husband had the contraction timer, which we didn't use second time around, but it had alerted him that we should go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was still very much like, okay, so I went and, you know, packed up the bags and ready to go. And when we got to the hospital, all these bright lights, I could feel myself just really closing off and I could feel my contractions that were spacing apart and they weren't as frequent as what they were at home.
Which is so normal when we move. And really for everyone, you know, even if you're in fully cranking labor, I think even so, you can feel on a subtle level, even if you continue, that things does slow down a little bit or, you know, stagnate. They can continue to be very strong in active labor, but nothing happens because you're moving. Like it's just your body protecting you. It's just a very physiological reaction. So normal for anyone listening who's going to go to hospital. Like so normal that it will do that, especially in early labor, which it sounds like maybe you were in because of that spacing out. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. And it was in the midst of COVID as well. So I was met with nurses who, one, they weren't local. I hadn't met them before either. They were traveling nurses, still beautiful women, but they were in the full hazmat gear.
Wow.
Like just really quite medicalized and it was quite a confronting thing to come up against when you're in the middle of labor. Like I felt like I was instantly being treated as a patient.
Yeah.
When I got there, the room was bright. All the monitoring machines were all laid out ready for me, ready to go. And being in the naive mind that I was like, yep, just, you know best, so, you know.
This gives me a bit of chills, even because this is the thing, you know. Truly, and I say this with love, but like, because I'm a midwife and I work in hospitals, so I know. So it's like, if you're not prepared and you don't know what the hospital is going to offer you, it's like walking into the lion's den and like,
isn't Yeah.
Like a little lamb. And you know, and I'm such an advocate for like bring a doula, bring a birth advocate and like, and do your research about like the procedures of birth and like download my free book, which is like all the procedures, you know, that's going to be offered to you in hospital and like prepare so that you know.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I always feel like, oh no.
I want to go back and like cuddle my previous self with the first labor because it's just like I was so lost. But
which is such a normal story for a first time mom. Like it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And the midwives, they didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know what I wanted. I thought I knew, but there was no guidelines for them. I didn't have a birth plan. So it was really, wasn't well prepared at all. So when we got to the labouring suite, they checked me and said I was only 3 centimetres and they said, you can go home, which hindsight, I wish I did. Mm. But we decided to stay and I jumped in the shower and it was probably about another 6 hours that I laboured in the hospital and I could really feel that medical time constraint on me because of the amount of people coming in and checking on me and consistently asking me, do you want pain meds? Do you want this? Do you want that? It was that constant, like, we need to get you, like, you need to hurry up. That's how I felt. And I remember I had a really quite a strong contraction in the shower. I was so exhausted and my husband was as well. And we both just broke down crying. It was horrible. And there was this older midwife come in and she said to me, you have to make a decision. You either keep going or we do the epidural. And being in such a vulnerable state, I decided to go with the epidural, which, just to be given that ultimatum, you know, you're naked in the shower and there's someone looking at you saying, you need to make a big decision right now. And you're just like, oh, I was just so frazzled. And at I didn't know time, if I made the right one.
Yeah. At that time, did you know where you were at? Did they do a vag examination before you got the epidural?
I hadn't progressed any further than 4 centimetres. And I had a couple of examinations and they kept giving me different centimetres from different midwives.
Oh, yeah.
So I was just
this all is over so the important joint. The information you're just sharing now, because this is the thing, like each practitioner will have, you know, it's different hand, it's different, it's so subjective, you know, and not everyone's going to have the same. And the reason I'm asking is just like knowing, because this is the thing too, like your inner resistance, inner fear, you know, which is so normal the first time around to go through the layers of that. And you know, it helps to have someone who kind of can guide you through that, obviously, hold that sacred space for you to like dare to have that big cry like you had with your partner, like you're exhausted because you've been up all night and you've been laboring for a long time. And, you know, sleep deprivation definitely makes me super cranky. And I feel like such a baby when I haven't slept, and that's without being also in labor, right? So like it takes its toll of being up for a long time and laboring. So it makes sense that you might not have opened, you know, because our cervix is so sensitive. We need to feel fully safe and in trust and supported and in love. And hospitals aren't always great for that. You can have great midwives, you know, that can do that for you for sure in hospital. You can be lucky and have one of those midwives for sure. But it also takes a lot of course, preparation to trust that really intense process that birth is.
Yes.
Which it sounds like you figured out the second time around. So it sounded like you went down that normal kind of route that so many women do, where they just don't have that good support that helps them through and that deep preparation that's needed, which, ends up then you're going on the flow of the hospital's flow and not your desired, you know,
birth journey. It's it makes me really sad because these women feel like they've failed. I felt like I'd failed. But it's just understanding that it's the medical system that have failed you as well, and fully stripping it back and just understanding, the medical system versus having a natural birth.
So different, you know, and had you been this beautiful, naive woman that so many are the first time around, right? But you'd lived in a time where the local midwife had come around to your house and she would have, you know, prepared you before, and she would have been there as a sacred space holder and guided you through continuously, not leaving that room, just being with you. That naive first time mom might have progressed faster and had a natural birth in that environment, right? But you stepped into a system that doesn't support physiology without understanding that it doesn't support physiology and not preparing for that. And you ended up, which again, I just want everyone to hear, like, this is not your fault, because the thing is, this is most first-time mamas will go through this, unfortunately, in one sense, because it is unfortunate, because it doesn't have to be like this for most. You step into that and have to have that first birth to wake up and go, whoa, okay, did not realize this. And then obviously, you know, which we're going to now, like, you'll have that second birth so differently. But I wish with all my heart that, you know, and that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to reach all these first-time mamas, go like, prepare, claim your birth, you know, learn, educate yourself, and like, and choose, you know, and that can still be choosing the hospital, that, you know, you can have a natural physiological birth in the hospital, but you need so much more preparation than having a home birth with a known midwife. So much more preparation. So in the end, you had an epidural, you had your baby.
I did. Oh, it's a feeling I would never forget, when the little man came out and was placed on my chest. But with the epi, I also had an episiotomy and vacuum as well, because Bubs had his arm up and around his head, so he was right there in the birth canal, but because I had no sensation, there was no way I could push him out. There was as much as I deeply wanted to be able to, the vacuum was, it's a part of the epidural cocktail that you get.
That's it, Dana, that's it, you know, because when you have the epidural, you're often on your back and you just don't have that space. And when it comes, when a baby comes out with what's called a compound hand, or just the hand next to the face or the head, whatever, there's more obviously to push out at once, and you know, you need all the room you can get. So, you know, being upright and moving with that baby, and you know, dancing that baby down is what's needed, which is, you know, doesn't really work that well when you have an epidural. So that is the thing that, you know, happens a lot of the times, that there is a need then for instrumental birth. And
So I also had a hemorrhage once Bubs was out. I wasn't aware at the time. They just said, you've lost a lot of blood and I wasn't allowed to go home. And the word hemorrhage wasn't used until I looked back on my paperwork, and I was like, wow, I actually had a hemorrhage, and I was just told that I'd lost some blood and I wasn't able to go home.
You know, and how just, much you lost?
It was about 1.7.
Okay, yeah, that's quite a lot of blood for sure. Which again is, you know, is a risk with hospital birth and within the medicalization of birth. That's increases that physiology, and keeping it like physiologically safe is also meaning decreasing the risk of bleeding for anyone listening.
It's after birth, I also had no real support with breastfeeding. I was told, you've got this. I was showed some positions with breastfeeding. I had no idea what I was doing. My poor nipples were just torn to pieces, and Bubs wasn't getting enough as well. He because they were just wounds, basically, that he was trying to feed off. Mm. And I fell very ill probably about a fortnight after giving birth. So not only feeling terrible after having so much blood loss, I ended up back in the emergency with severe mastitis.
Right.
And so I was in there, I had antibiotics, yeah, running through my system for quite some time.
Mm.
And, yeah, they also realized I had an infection from retained placenta.
Right.
So my body was not in a good way. I had a very high temperature and I was all over the shop. I was very emotional, as you would be.
Yeah.
I felt so let down by everyone in the industry. I was like, this can't be how new mums are treated.
Yes, it is, like, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's. Mm.
And this is the thing, because most, you know, like yourself, like, you know, the general population, like, which we are taught is to, like, you know, they're going to help us and they have our best interest at heart, but we have and people within it do, you know, there are amazing midwives and doctors and nurses and so knowledgeable about physiological birth and everything, but the system is rigged and set up not to support mothers and babies to have the best outcomes, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, wow. What an initiation of fire and rite of passage you went through. And what's your biggest takeaways that you then, you know, getting pregnant again, obviously did different this time around? Do you want to share that? What was your biggest takeaways from this birth, the first birth?
I knew everything I didn't want to do again. I still deeply knew that I was able to have the birth that I wanted. I was almost one and done, to be honest, because it was that traumatic for me. My husband and I, we spoke about having a second, and it was something I knew I was going to have to work through and heal myself in order to be the mum that I wanted to be as well. Yeah, so just stripping back birth as much as possible and speaking to more women about the natural side of birth, yeah, is something that I really needed to take in to having my second bubs.
So what preparation did you do this time around?
So second time round, I looked into getting a private midwife. Unfortunately, in Australia, it is quite expensive to do that. And I was so fortunate enough, at one of my appointments, there was this beautiful student midwife who was needing to follow through a birth, and her and I just clicked instantly. We were talking back and forth through the appointment, and she said, "Do you mind if I follow you through your pregnancy and go through your labor with you?" And I was beside myself. I was so excited to have this, just another woman, follow me through. And so I had Sean with me. She's such a beautiful person. And I also really dove into your podcast as well, stripping through all these beautiful women's stories and understanding that I can do this. That was one of the main things I would tell myself all the time. I can do this. I can do this. And through, like, weaving my way through all these women's stories, I was introduced to Rhea Dempsey and all of her work. And fortunate enough, she was having an intensive workshop in Melbourne when I was probably 6 or 7 months pregnant. And it was no question. I said to my husband, "We are going to this course and Sean is coming with us." So the three of us all went together and it was just phenomenal. I cried so much during that workshop, and just, yeah, how Rhea puts it so simply. It was, yeah, a phenomenal. It was 2 days we spent with her. It was, just the greatest 2 days.
That really tells you, like, how, yeah, preparation is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding the processes and everything. I love that.
Are you ready to join me and others in being a part of the movement of the reclaiming of birth as a rite of passage and as a woman's sacred business? I'm calling you who recognizes birth as a sacred portal and a life-altering event worthy of honoring and safeguarding. You who want to walk alongside women through her rite of passage from maiden to mother and provide a safe, sacred, and physiological birth space. Here's your invitation to join me and other women from around the world in the Sacred Birthworker Mentorship Program, becoming a sacred birth advocate and space holder, the Beyond a Doula training, starting in January 2024. It's a full year's container of learning, embodying, and deepening into a true space holder and sacred advocate for a woman's rite of passage of birth. By weaving ancient and modern knowledge of her story, women's wisdom, physiological birth skills, and the art of sacred space holding, as well as diving into the variations of normal, medicalized birth, birth advocacy within the current unnatural maternity system, and so much more. This program is unique to its kind in its depth and how deep we go, and also that I offer you one-on-one mentoring with me personally assisting you in becoming the clear channel and the best space holder that you can be. You will be so held and so nurtured and so supported for a whole year inside our worldwide online community as you learn and embody the teachings and skills and start sharing your gifts with the world. If your intuition is ringing clear as you receive this invitation, find out more and apply at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or via the link in the show notes.
So let's dive on into this birth story. Did you have any early signs of labor approaching for you?
With Luca, there was some light bleeding probably a few days before. Nothing really too intense. I just sort of fobbed it off and kind of went on my way. And then I think it's the day after, I lost my mucus plug. So my waters didn't break this time. Yeah, I'd lost part of my mucus plug. Yeah. And I didn't lose it fully until 2 days later. There was mild cramping. So that was probably the early signs for me. But being a mum of a little toddler, I was busy chasing him around, and I didn't fully lose my plug until probably 8 o'clock the next night. And then that's when I thought, okay, this is time to, we're stepping into labor now. So my husband and I, we went for a walk around the block, did some curb walking, stepping up and down, and we went and got a hot curry, did all the things. It was just such a beautiful night that we had, just the two of us, because we obviously, having a son, we don't get too much time together. And we decided to set up the birth space as well, and the lights were all low. I had my affirmations all on the wall. And it was just so beautiful. My husband really, he was the greatest support person and partner throughout my second labor.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me emotional to think about it. He was so strong in encouraging me through the contractions and keeping me moving, and just, yeah, it was just a really beautiful, beautiful time in the early, yeah.
Right. So then what? Did you go to bed? Could you go to bed? Did you have like mild contractions in the beginning that you could rest through, or?
They were fairly consistent from the start. I loved laboring in the shower. I feel like I was in the shower for majority of my labor. And just with the birthing ball and working through it. And we also had a TENS machine as well, which I really loved. I also had the birthing comb as well. So those were I just loved all those laboring techniques for my second. Yeah, it just felt so primal to where I was stepping into compared to my first labor. I could hear my husband saying things to me, but I couldn't speak. In a sense, I understood what he was saying, but being so in your body and going with the flow, there was just that very instinctual, like that innate knowing that you're able to birth. Yeah, it was amazing.
So how long were you at home? Because you were planning on having a hospital birth this time too, so...
Yes.
Tell us about the movement throughout the night and what else.
Yeah, so it's really quite a blur, my second birth. We stayed home for as long as possible, and it was probably about 8 hours or so, and through doing the Rhea Dempsey course, my husband knew me having the contractions that weren't stopping, that it was time to potentially go to the hospital. When I got to the hospital, I only had 2 or 3 more contractions where I felt like I needed to be on the ground. I couldn't stand. I didn't want to be on the bed. I wanted to be on all fours. And within that moment, my urge to bear down and push just was overwhelming, and my waters broke within that first bearing down moment. And then it was only about 10-20 minutes of bearing down and moving through the motions that Luca was born. It was just incredible how, yeah, you can transcend into, yeah, that feeling.
That feeling of
just so primal. I really, yeah, just roared. I was so loud. I didn't expect myself to be that loud. But it was just so beautiful.
So it doesn't sound like you were in the hospital long. Did your student midwife make it?
She did. She did. She was there. My husband had texted her throughout the night, and yeah, she was there ready and waiting. The room was fully set up. It was so beautiful. They had the fairy lights and some beautiful lavender incense set up for me as well. So they knew what I didn't want as well. And I didn't want any monitoring.
Yeah.
I didn't allow them to do any internal examinations.
Beautiful.
And because I'd had the postpartum hemorrhage last time, they wanted to have a cannula inserted as soon as I got there, which I refused, which was met with resistance prior to going into labor. I had to really stand my ground with that one. And
I'm so happy.
With multiple.
So happy too, because for anyone listening, so this is protocol, right? So if you've had a postpartum hemorrhage before, they prepare for you to have it again by having a cannula in your hand already, right? When you come in to the hospital. And the thing is, if you actually look at the birth and you go like, but why did you bleed? You can probably most likely see that it's all the interventions and that long labor you had that did that, right? And so instead going like, so how can we optimize the physiology, which you understood? So you did, right? You came in as late as you could, which is brilliant. And you had already made sure through that continuity of care with your student midwife, which kind of worked like your doula in one sense, right? Because it's that student midwife is, you know, you have that continuity of care that you don't have in the hospital system. So she knew, right? You knew how to prep your room and you'd already said no to everything. So you knew you could come in there and no one would bother you and you would be able to stay in your bubble, which actually is then keeping you and your baby safe.
Yeah.
And you think the hospital would know this, but no.
You think
they do the absolute opposite, bright lights, putting needles in your hands. How is that going to uphold the physiology? No, that will totally take you out of it and into pain. It's painful to get a cannula in your hand. And
I know.
I love that. Yeah. I love that you had been so clear on that and that you really optimized your chances of having your beautiful birth in the hospital system.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny the amount of, I had met resistance with a few midwives in regards to the cannula. They said, if you go into shock, will you let us put one in? And
yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, it's like, please do. Don't just leave me.
It's not all or nothing. It's not like, oh, yeah. I don't want it at, you know, when I come in, when I'm not obviously needing it. But yes. If I have an emergency, yes, act like you would always act in an emergency, right? If that's so silly that they would say that.
I know. Yeah, it was just instilling fear in myself, but I just had to keep telling myself I can do this and I knew I could. It was just so incredible. I wanted to hug everyone as well. These beautiful midwives, they all knew each other as well and they were all local women. And I'd met them as well throughout my appointment. So it was just, they knew exactly what I wanted. They knew not to ask me any questions, to direct them to my husband or to Sean, just let me do my thing. But mind you, we were there all of 20 minutes and Lucas was here. So.
Do you live close to the hospital? Was it a long car ride?
Oh, good. No, very close. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes it just
like 30 seconds down the road.
Oh my goodness, 30 seconds. That's probably the closest I've ever heard someone live to the hospital.
Really? God,
you could walk on over, really.
I could have, yes.
That's hilarious. I love that. I love that. How beautiful. Beautiful. Yes. And so tell us about birthing your baby. So it takes 20 minutes to bear down. How was did you feel a ring of fire at all? Because this time you didn't have an epidural. So this time you felt everything. How was the difference for you? Can you tell us about the difference?
Oh, the difference of just being able to feel bubs moving and positioning, like coming down through the birth canal was incredible. So I felt the ring of fire. That was something I had to roar my way through. I definitely, I just found myself moving with the contractions second time round. It helped me just go deeper into myself. Like I could feel where he was so I could move into positions that would work for my body. It was just something that happened so naturally.
Instinctively, yes, it does.
Yeah, it was. I knew when I had to move and if I'd been in a position too long, I knew exactly where I wanted to go and exactly what I wanted to do. I knew what I didn't want. My husband at one stage, bless him, he was trying to massage my hips and I fully swatted him away. I was very, very much like no one touched me. I was, just full primal mode. It was amazing.
A birthing woman knows, like when she is fully left to the intelligence and the physiology of birth, she knows. But when that's interrupted either by other people telling her what to do and she believes them and think that they are the experts and they would know more than she does, which they don't, because ultimately you are the expert of your baby, your body, and your birth process.
Yeah.
You know, other people around you can potentially suggest something and you can feel into that, go like, is that true? Yes or no? But you should never just blindly follow someone else, because you are the expert. And that, you know, goes to show exactly what you just said about you just knowing what you needed.
Mm.
So you pushed through the ring of fire and the head was born. Was the whole baby born at once?
So he would come down the canal and then go back up, and that motion, it really felt so quick at the time. Just, it felt like he just shot out. Like there wasn't really too much of that bearing down sensation for me. I did have a second degree tear, but no pain meds. I wouldn't have even really known. I was had that beautiful oxytocin cocktail love bubble. I felt so incredible, like I was on top of the world. As soon as Bubs came out, it was, yeah, I felt so powerful and still to this day just feel unstoppable. I am so grateful that I have had the birth that I so deeply desired, and it healed so many parts of me from my first birth as well.
Yes, it showed you your power as a woman.
Yeah.
And the innate design of your body and birth. And I love that you just mentioned that, because this is the thing that I wish all women could hear, that when you have a physiological birth, the cocktail that you get at the instant of birth that you just mentioned, that high, that rush of just love, expansion, ecstatic joy,
yeah,
you know, it is not only life-saving for you and your baby, like it's designed to prevent bleeding, and, you know, it is designed to really bond with your baby deeply. It helps with breastfeeding. I would love to know about your journey with breastfeeding this time around, if that was anything different from the first. So different, right? So this is the thing that, that the hospitals fuck up for women,
literally,
right? Like, excuse my French, but like,
no,
this is like, it is so clear, right? With your beautiful two birth stories that both were initiations and rite of passages in their own right. There's something, you know, I'm not saying that that first birth wasn't beautiful and what you potentially needed to go through to be the mother you are now with that baby and learn what you needed to learn. But then this birth also shows like the difference when you medicalize birth and when you uphold the physiology of birth.
Yeah.
And they were both hospital births, but one was you walking in and going with the flow of the hospital birth kind of routines, which, you know, ended up with a very normal birth in hospital.
Yeah.
And then the opposite, when you fully claimed it and you prepared for it and you just had that. Such a different, amazing, natural hospital birth. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just the polar opposites. But with my breastfeeding with Luca, I obviously, from Ari's experience, I knew what not to do. And I learnt the hard way, unfortunately, a lot of the time. So, yeah, it's just flowed so much easier for me. It's hasn't been painful. I've just stepped into breastfeeding beautifully this time round with Luca, and he just feeds like a champ.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't, it's just a beautiful bond that I have with Luca, and it's something I wish I had with Ari, but also,
how it is.
It's just what happened.
And that, you know, that's the thing also. There is much higher breastfeeding success rate when you have a physiological birth compared to a medicalized birth. Like, that's very, very obvious in the research and by women's stories. And it's also to take into consideration when you choose how to birth, where to birth, and how to plan for your birth, you know. And And again, like, I don't know how many times I state this in this podcast, you know, plan for your postpartum. And like,
yes,
you know, there are courses out there how to, you know, to prepare for breastfeeding and baby care and all of it. And I mean, I have the Nourishing Postpartum course, which talks all about both breastfeeding and baby care and healing after birth. And, you know, do it, like, prepare for it. Don't miss out on that one, because it's a huge decision the first time around. You know, it's a huge transition. Maiden to mother is massive on all levels. Yeah. You know,
yeah, it's such a big transition, that's for sure.
So if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Well, first of all, I'd probably give her a big cuddle and say, she's not alone in whatever way her birth goes. She is, you're not alone. And just to stand in your power and to be clear on your choices and trust your instincts. Because once a woman remembers how powerful she is, she will be unstoppable, as we all are. Yes.
Beautiful advice. Thank you so much, Dana, for coming on and wanting to share your birth stories with us. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing them.
Thank you so much for having me, Anna. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it, leave a review, or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.